This is Ian Greenwood Remembered, where some of those close to him share their thoughts and memories of Ian, who sadly passed away recently. Ian was, of course, most widely known for his time as a councillor and council leader, so it is only fitting that we hear first from the current leader of Bradford Council, Susan Hinchcliffe, and former leader of the Conservatives on the council, Simon Cook.
Obviously, we're all very sad that Ian Greenwood has passed. He's a sitting councillor, but he's also served the district in many ways for many years. And many people across Bradford from all communities are going to really miss him. And I've had so many messages this morning from people saying how sorry they are to have lost him, because he's meant so much to so many people's lives.
So long in office as leader and as councillor, what achievements spring to mind immediately with you?
I think Ian was very good at bringing people together, so he could reach out to all communities and set them round a table and get people to get on with each other. And I think he did that all the time, just as part of his everyday persona. He was good at bringing people together. And from a cohesion, integration point of view, in a place like Bradford, that kind of skill is invaluable. There are practical things, so like the City Park idea. He backed that from the outset. And on the day of opening, he was out there celebrating with the 35,000 people on that when it opened. And he was so pleased to see that day. But he could see a good idea. He could see what was good for Bradford, and he knew that would be good for Bradford, and I think his faith in it has been justified actually by all of us who now enjoy that space. He was very patriotic. He cared very much about Bradford and about his nation, and understood the importance of the armed forces for us as a nation. And of course, we've just passed Remembrance Day, and I was reminded that one of the things that he really championed was making sure that the war memorial in Bradford carried the names of soldiers beyond the Second World War. There's many cenotaphs up and down the country, World War II, World War One, and then that's it. But one of the mothers of the soldiers who died more recently in the Afghanistan conflict said, "Why isn't my son's name on that memorial?" He took that to heart, and he made that happen for all the soldiers that had died from World War II up until the present day. He realised how important that was to people, but also to the district, and to the importance of the armed forces in our psyche as a nation.
Now, Ian Greenwood, of course, was leader of the council, and then he was no longer councillor, and he'd recently come back into politics, well, not back into politics, he'd been in the background, hadn't he, but back as a councillor again. It's quite a legacy, isn't it, to use these words too freely, don't we, sometimes when people pass on. But he has got quite a legacy, hasn't he?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, somebody was telling me about the fact that a family who I don't know have actually a picture of Ian in their front room, because actually he helped them as a family, and they always remember that and were always grateful for that. So in political terms, obviously, he was hugely significant for the district. Everybody in Bradford will know Ian Greenwood. He was from Bradford, of Bradford, but he got joy in helping the individual people and seeing them progress. And there's many, many people in Bradford who have thanks for Ian Greenwood, because he was wanting to make sure that the whole of Bradford succeeded. And to do that, he supported individual families to succeed in the world. And he was a good friend to many.
As leader of the council and also as councillor, there's always the public things, the big things, like you talked about City Park that he was involved with. But quite often there's the stuff behind the scenes, isn't there, that people don't really see but is vitally important to the communities.
Yes, I mean, particularly things, obviously we've been threatened with the far right on many occasions in Bradford, and Ian was very instrumental in making sure that people came together to fight that and stand against the far right without exacerbating the situation. And of course, his calming influence and bringing people together behind the scenes really bore dividends for us as a district. And we're known as a friendly, welcoming district and city where all people are welcome. And a lot of that is down to Ian and his vision for the district. I think he was very much personified that spirit of Bradford and made sure that what we all prize in that Bradford characteristic is throughout everything that we do. And as you say, that's not always seen, but that collaborative instinct has been really valuable to this district over many years.
He wasn't just a councillor and former leader, he was, of course, a Labour Party member as well. I imagine that's going to be quite a hole to fill within the Labour Party.
Absolutely. So he was a Labour Party member for many years, trade unionist as well. He was from a working class family in Bradford who was born into very humble beginnings, and He educated himself, he made sure that he did as well as he could in life, in spite of the fact that he was born into quite poor surroundings. And I think he's a real Bradford success story, actually. Just somebody who had the skills and talents to succeed in life and use those skills and talents for the good of the people of Bradford. And that's selfless public service is something I think we should all aspire to.
Now, when he became councillor and then leader, he continued to live in a council house. Very much still the man of the people.
Absolutely. He didn't have an airs and graces. He lived in a council flat and, well, not council flat, it was in communities flat, let's call it what it is. It's in communities these days. And he was very much valued as part of that community. He lived in the ward I represent and he knew everybody around him. He supported his neighbours, was a very good neighbour to people in hours of need. So even on an individual basis, he could not watch somebody go by without supporting them and helping them along their way. And he did that just as part of his everyday existence. He didn't need to be elected to do that, but he was also elected as well.
And finally, do you have a favourite memory of him?
Oh, I don't know really. I think with lots of stories about Ian, I've already been recollecting those stories with colleagues over this morning and last night. And I think he was probably somebody who was very much rooted in Bradford and was always reminding of us how important it is to put people first. And that sense of perspective, I think, is something that I've benefited from, but others have as well. But that never leaves you, does it? So that will always be something that resonates with me and with others, actually, about making sure you do the right thing, you put the public first, and you make sure Bradford's as good as it can be. And he believed in that, and for his legacy, we must continue that.
Oh, it's very sad. It's very sad. We had our moments, but he was a straight politician, one of the really good guys. So, yeah, it's a really sad day.
You obviously faced him from the other side of the chamber.
Yeah, I did. Over a long time, he was leader of the council and I was deputy leader, and we had a multi-party executive back there, so I worked with him, in effect, on running the council for 3 years in the early 2000s. So, yeah, we spent a lot of time talking to Ian, and he was tough. But he was always straight, and if he said he'd do something, he always did it. And I think he genuinely cared deeply for the people he represented back then in Littlehorn, which, of course, was where he was born and brought up, so it kind of mattered to him.
The council chamber has some interesting and sometimes amusing, sometimes antagonistic debates there. What debate really stands out in your mind in all that you had with him?
I don't know. He was a good public speaker. He was in that trade unionist tub-thumping tradition and a loud voice, and he was never dominated in that respect because he's a big man in all sorts of ways. And I don't know if anything particularly stands out. The things that everyone will always remember about Ian, one is he knew everybody and he knew everything. And it was almost like a joke, you know, that we'd have a reference to something that happened back in the late 1970s or early 1980s, and Ian would stand up and say, "Well, I remember," and he'd give you a story about the person. And he'd been part of Bradford's furniture. He didn't become a Bradford councillor until the late 1990s, but obviously he'd worked for the council, he'd been a senior trade union official, so, you know, his connections go right back into the 1970s. You know, you couldn't catch him out. Some people you can catch out, but for Ian, if you were to argue with him, you had to know what you were talking about. And you had to have your evidence marshalled there, and he had to make sure you were going to make your point strongly. But as I said, for all the debates that we had, you know, when push came to shove and you sat down with him, you know, like we did on some of the regeneration stuff, trying to get investment into Bradford. I was on Bradford Trident Board for a long time because Ian chaired that, and he was immensely proud of the work that he did in trying to improve that community. So I saw a lot of him as just a practical, very practical politician and a very caring man in terms of the people he had around him and the people he represented.
One of my memories of him was always with the moleskin notebook, always having a notebook to hand to take notes on whatever the topic was of conversation.
Absolutely, all the time. One of the things I can remember him, when I did my master's degree, for one of the pieces of work, and I forget what it was, I think it was talking about Bradford Trident, actually, I interviewed him as part of my work, you know, which was quite an interesting experience. But he told me then that when he was in the ward, he always had the little notebook, and he'd make little notes in there, and then he'd come back into the office and he'd sit down, or he'd give it to one of the people who worked in the office and say, look, you know, can you sort this? And, you know, he was really assiduous on that. So, you know, he took it everywhere, because then he said, oh, I never missed anything. I never found myself speaking to someone, you know, on a street corner and not able to say, yes, I can help you, and write a note. He was very assiduous in that. It was kind of his life, if you like.
And what would you say was his greatest legacy?
I don't know. I suspect, in a funny kind of way, Trident would be the thing that he was probably most attached to. The fact that there was a parish council now, but it's something that carries on some of the work that's being done there. Given that was, you know, West Bowling, and it was the kind of place where he was born and brought up, I suspect that the work that happened there is probably some of the stuff that he was proudest of. And I suspect the other thing is a lot of the work that he did as a trade unionist, both in general terms, but also the work on the pension fund, which I think was quite important to him too.
Spent a lot of time in the West Yorkshire Pension Fund, didn't he?
Latterly especially, I know, because he was chair and he chaired the investment committees. And I think in a way it carried on where he came from, which was as a person who represented the workers of the council. And that was his route into politics, came from getting involved with the trade unions on Bradford Council. So finishing up as chairman of the pension fund, if you like, completes the circle of that, because that's the money that belongs to those workers, and I think he was probably looking after it was important to him.
Now, Simon, we often think of people from different political parties as being enemies, almost fighting for different things, but one thing I'm hearing from you is that you did respect him and did like him as a person.
Yeah, I mean, big mates or anything like that, but, you know, he was a straight politician. He was, for me, the kind of Labour Party I was brought up with. You know, my dad was a Tory councillor, and the Labour Party that we saw, this was in London, but they were like Ian. They were trade unionists. You're right, they were strong-willed men. They were really hard-working and committed, and we need more politicians like Ian who come up from the bottom and, you know, worked hard at it and have a real understanding of who they're representing and what they're doing. In that respect, yeah, I hope it's not the kind of end of an era. I hope there's another generation of working-class politicians like Ian to carry on that fight that he fought.
That was Council Leader Susan Hinchcliffe and Councillor Simon Cook. Ian was also a staunch fighter against extremism and a trade unionist. And we hear of that work from Paul Mazaros from Bradford Trades Union Council and Hope Not Hate, and Bill Adams, the Regional Secretary of the TUC.
Our concern at the Trades Council and other anti-fascist activists about the rise of the far right in Bradford, particularly the BNP in the early noughties. And so Ian were very accommodating to give us help and advice and be part of making sure that we had a coherent campaign in Bradford against the fascists. So really our relationship started then and grew from there.
And what kind of support was he giving to anti-fascist activities?
The important thing about Ian for me is, first of all, he was a senior politician that understood that this was an important issue and that it was an issue that had to be faced head-on and not shied away from it. And especially in the early days, it was difficult to find mainstream politicians who got it. He got it and he wanted to help. And the other thing he understood is that we needed a non-sectarian, if you like, approach to it. So, for example, he very early on, he advised me to go and see the leader of the Conservatives at that time, Margaret, and said, you know, she's thoroughly decent, she'll understand this and you'll be fine going to see her. And that was the case. And so he opened doors, he made sure we had a broader alliance, that it wasn't just, if you like, the usual suspects, that it was an alliance of people across Bradford and across Bradford's communities. And Ian helped shape and facilitate that at many different levels and always encouraged us, you know, and kept it going. And after the riots and all the fallout from that, Ian, he kept us all together. He brought us all together, he kept us all together. And even when it looked bleak, you know, he provided the glue to a sort of thin red line that could exist. I think his role was fairly pivotal at that time, to be honest.
You started working together, but you obviously became quite good friends as well as a result of this working together.
Yeah, I'm proud to have been his friend. And he was so widely read. He knew about... one day you might think, aha, I know something that I bet Ian don't know. Something really obscure, and you'd test it out with him. And of course, he always ended up knowing more about it because he'd read more books about it. I don't know how many books he read in his life, but it were a lot. And he seemed to retain that knowledge. He were wonderful company because he had a sharp wit and much knowledge. So you would always have a laugh with him. Sometimes we'd just go for a walk up on Ilkley Moor and he'd be telling you tales of the past, and especially Bradford's history and Bradford's Labour history that he knew so much about. So proud of Bradford. Mr. Bradford in so many ways. And a lovely fella.
And if you had to think of one memory that really sums up Ian, what would it be?
Well, my best memories are Ian. I can't reproduce on air. When there were serious tasks facing the city, or, you know, like things that he had to deal with, he'd be stern-faced and on it and professional. But in those lighter moments where he were able to be fun, there were so many of them. And I remember my daughter, when she were about four, telling him that he had to stand in the naughty corner, and off he went for 5 minutes, standing there and giggling away to himself because he knew he were making her day. All our kids loved him as well, so that's the kind of man he were. He had time for people. He had a little bit of himself to give everybody.
And what do you think his greatest legacy to Bradford is?
Well, I don't know if it's one single thing. I think, in many ways, it's what didn't happen. I think the dark times after the riots, when the city were really on its knees, it needed people in positions of authority and power who could drag us back from that brink and bring communities together, rebuild trust between communities. I think there's a resilience now in Bradford to the division that once tried to prey upon us. And I think he played a major role in building that resilience between and amongst all communities in our city. And I think that's his legacy.
I've known Ian for 20 years. I think he was leader of Bradford Council when I first met him. But he was very, very close to the trade unions. He came up through Nalgo and Unison. And our paths crossed very often on a wide range of subjects, you know, from pensions, of course, you know, to pay and conditions and politics. You know, Ian was always kind of Mr. Bradford for me. If you needed anything doing in Bradford, he was your first port of call.
And how important was that trade union history in fomenting him into the political character that we know him as?
Well, people always used to say he was, you know, a big tent player, and I always felt that whatever the subject, whether you were talking to a group of workers or, you know, individuals from Bradford, or talking with government ministers, Ian was always kind of like a giant in that tent. He always seemed to know his way around and, you know, be able to talk to people, as I say, you know, from the higher echelons of our society right down to normal people, where I think he was also very comfortable. And that's why, you know, he was leader so long, and unfortunately he lost his seat and then came back. And it's very sad, you know, to hear the news that he's passed away, because I know only last week he was trying to contact a few of our union people in the region with a new project. So it's a bit of a shock.
So despite having politically gone down the role of the council and being a councillor, he still maintained those essential trade union activities?
He did. You know, if I can say without any disrespect, he was old school, and he knew the relationships that councils needed to have with trade unions, and also how he could get unions to deliver things in conjunction with the council. And I think that's why he was always so successful.
Looking back at his time as a trade unionist, is there anything that stands out in your mind of particular achievements or things that he was really motivated in?
Well, you know, I didn't actually negotiate anything with Ian, but I do know, you know, I've seen many times his stance against the far right, for example, how to treat everybody in a dignified manner, and his fairness in making sure that working people had a say, and that meant at every level in society, whether it was at the local level in Bradford or whether it was banging on ministers' doors in Whitehall to make sure that workers got the right channels to raise any issues which he felt he could take up for them. So he was a people's champion. He was very, very interested and involved with the pension schemes for workers from local authorities, and I know he was tireless in that work.
And when you look back at having known him for 20 years, is there one memory that really stands out in your mind from all that time?
Not really. There's a number of them. You know, I once spent some time with him in Brussels. We were on a mission to influence some MEPs. And, you know, even though he was a kind of diplomat, he was very vociferous, leaving the MEPs under no illusions of what we wanted. And I thought to myself that night how forceful he was and how committed he was. to working class people, and that was probably my standout memory of him, how tough he actually was. And you know, on all other times he could be as amenable, you know, as a fluffy toy, but when it mattered he really did get stuck in on behalf of people in Bradford and workers in Bradford.
So how much of that was down to him still maintaining his roots in still being working class, still maintaining those trade union values?
I think probably all of it. He was known as Mr. Bradford, you know, and he spent many years as leader of the council. And I think people knew him as a local fighter for people's rights, you know, and he did have that kind of union discipline in him that I'm afraid some politicians, I think, nowadays don't do. He was never one to seek popularity. He got on with what he believed in. I think that's a real, you know, good trait in politicians that unfortunately has waned a little. So, you know, Ian will go down as one of the best fighters Bradford have had for it. And I'm sure people will remember him well over the years, what he's done for the city.
Looking at his time, what do you think is the legacy that he leaves behind him?
Well, I think he left the Labour Party rejuvenated. There's still lots of issues around Bradford, but he certainly helped put Bradford on the map. I think his legacy will be a city going forward of young people. I think it's the fastest growing city in the country in terms of young people. It's a city that has many diverse people. I think it's got more people that speak different languages than any other city in the UK. And given the right investment, Bradford could be a fantastic place. And a lot of that is down to the foundations that people like Ian laid for all the years in trying to get Bradford through a pretty bad time of recessions and industry closures and changing employment. All that was what he tackled, and people will say that he did make a difference.
That was Paul Mazaros and Bill Adams. In addition, Ian was respected for his work in the civic arena of the city and in its communities. And Cy Cunningham, the chair of the Civic Society, and Julie Pryke, a local community worker, share their thoughts.
I was absolutely gutted when I heard the news and very shocked as well, purely because Ian was one of those people who I would consider to be like a towering Bradford figure and really part of the fabric of this city. And certainly a lot of the big decisions that have been made, the big things that have happened to Bradford, certainly in my time since I've been involved with the city, Ian's been involved in some way. Things like the Mirrorpool development and a lot of the city centre regeneration, Ian will have been the face of. And I feel like I was very lucky to get to know him a bit better over the last year or so, to share a few pints with him and to hear a bit of that legendary wisdom that everyone's been talking about recently. And I was surprised to learn a few things along the way too, and one of the things that stood out to me was to hear how involved Ian was in making sure that Morrisons kept their head office here in Bradford. I know that that was something that I didn't realise was up for debate at one point, whether they were looking to move somewhere else. And Ian, as I understand, was instrumental in making sure that this great Bradford company kept their office here in Bradford. So I think it's little things like that that probably don't get reported on as much in the fast-paced world of politics and local government that are always happening behind the scenes.
As chair of the Civic Society, do you feel that overall Ian's contribution to Bradford was a very, very positive one?
Certainly, yeah. I think as the Civic Society, we obviously work with people from across the political spectrum. We really have Bradford's best interests at heart, which is why it's so refreshing when you meet someone like Ian, who's just so obviously so very passionate about Bradford. Very pragmatic with it as well. You know, he's not someone who's just blindly saying, we're going to do X, Y and Z. Everything was always very well considered, I think, with Ian. And I think it's a testament to his legacy that when we were all very shocked about the news of his passing, we've seen a lot of praise come in from all political parties and from all backgrounds, people saying how sad they will be that Ian will no longer be a part of the civic affairs of this city. And really, I think, as well as the legacy around regeneration and some of the great things that are going on in Bradford, some of that bipartisanship as well is certainly something that I think we would benefit from having a lot more of, not just in Bradford, but in civic affairs in general and certainly at a national level in politics. I know Councillor Hinchcliffe, the leader of Bradford, has described Ian as a big tent politician, and I think that's really a great sort of summary of someone who fundamentally has people's best interests at heart and wants to do their best, not just for himself, not just for his political party, but for everybody in this city.
I know you originally met him through your role within the Civic Society, but I've got the impression that you developed much more of a friendship on top of that.
Very much so. And, you know, I think he was a very likeable individual. Fundamentally, he was someone who, if you bumped into him in the pub, you could have a few pints with him and chat about everything and anything, really. I know he was a big fan of the Fox in Shipley. I go in there for a few pints. My uncle's in there all the time, and they developed a really nice friendship. To get messages from people who'd known him from being out and about to say how shocked they were too, I think, again, is testament to the sort of impact he would have on Bradfordians all around the city. I think that will certainly be missed.
Looking at everything that he's done over the years, is there anything that stands out in your mind as being the project that you could really say was the one that Ian really put the biggest stamp on in terms of the civic society?
It would be very difficult to single one out. I think really it's about the passion and the enthusiasm that Ian had for Bradford more than anything. I think he was always standing up for the city. You know, whether that was making sure that we have the strongest possible voice in the region. As things have developed, he developed more prominence within the West Yorkshire Combined Authority, making sure that Bradford was getting a really good deal. And if, you know, we look at some of the legacy of the bigger developments that have happened here in Bradford during Ian's tenure, we have things like the Broadway and City Park. I think we can certainly thank that era for.
And what is your greatest memory of Ian?
Just having really nice conversations down the pub, you know, just being able to have very amiable chats, being able to disagree on things as well, but in a very civil way. We know that in Bradford there are a lot of issues that are very contentious and there isn't always consensus on everything. But that's not to say that you can't have a very civil debate about things, and that's something we're always trying to encourage at the Civic Society, is whether you do have strong views one way or another, we're all able to come together and say that we do have the best interests of Bradford at heart. And I think that's something that Ian certainly epitomised. I'm very sad that I won't get to benefit more from the legacy of someone like that. I think that characters like that will be sorely missed from public life in Bradford. I'm sure we can all learn a thing or two from the legacy.
I first met Ian when I worked as a community development worker on Canterbury Estate, and he was the local councillor. And I'd had experience of councillors, some being very responsive to people's needs and some not taking much notice at all, I'm afraid. Ian appeared on the scene and introduced himself. He couldn't miss him because he was a big guy, but he had a manner with him that you knew he was approachable and friendly and so on. And I told him about the current issues. I was worried about somebody's housing and I was worried about someone in debt and so on. And no hesitation, writes it all down, looks at the case file and is on the job. Not waiting for anybody to say, ready, steady, go, but he was already dealing with things. And over the years, because on that occasion, I think he was there for about 10 years and I was, we really got to know each other well and we're really quite good friends. Not that we've socialised so much, but just that we knew that we could trust each other, and he knew that I was doing work for people he respected and wanted to help, and I knew exactly the same.
And if you had a favourite memory of Ian, what would it be?
This won't be the sort of memory you're expecting. I was walking to Bradford City with my son and his friend on a Saturday afternoon, and this car went past, going in the same direction, beeped me, but then almost knocked me down. And it was Ian. Apparently he didn't support City to any extent, but he was taking his brother and his father to the match. And I saw him the next day, oh no, it must have been a Monday, and he was really, really apologetic, but at the same time he was laughing. It was just, it's a silly memory, but it was nice somehow. And I didn't feel that threatened by it.
You've also worked with quite a lot of students, haven't you? What was your experience with him and around students?
Well, he did quite a remarkable job. We had some students coming over from Poland who were student social workers, but who were training to be community development workers, and there were none in Poland at that time. We were writing the booklets and everything for them. And I rang him up on the off chance that he could see them and talk to them about the city, because I thought he was, as leader of the council, he had the most breadth of knowledge and depth of knowledge. And no hesitation, just looked in the diary and said, yes, can I come in on this date? We went in and we started off in the outer office, and they offered everyone a coffee, and he spoke to them immediately in Polish, which they were delighted about. And he explained that he went over quite often and so on. And then he sat down on the chair and spread out a bit. And then he decided this group were okay. So he then took us into the inner sanctum and we all sat in there. They were very impressed that we were actually in the leader of the council's office, you know. And he gave them such detailed information, all from the top of his head, about the city, about housing problems, about budgets that they had to manage from the government and everything. He didn't talk down to anybody or make anybody feel awkward in any way. He was just completely relaxed and happy to be doing that for them. And they're all taking frantic notes. I think it was very good for them.
Sounds like you're describing a man of the people there.
Yes. He was, well, I'm not quite sure where he was born, but he lived quite a lot of his time as a youngster on Canterbury Estate, as it turns out, and really understood the poverty, the difficult experiences people had when they didn't have a choice about what was happening to them. And he was determined to change things. He really did want to do that. And I think he could tell if you were honest, straightforward, weren't messing him about, then he was your absolute greatest ally. I suspect he might not have been quite so tolerant if you were doing none of those things. I really, really liked him as well as respecting him. He was a lovely man. And we're all going to be the poorer for him not being around.
That was Si Cunningham and Julie Pryke. This is Ian Greenwood Remembered on BCB 106.6 FM. Ian was mentor and friend to many political figures in Bradford, and Councillor Vanda Greenwood and Imran Hussain MP share their memories.
I met Ian in 1997 when I first joined the Labour Party. I'd been involved in the party for a long time, but I actually joined in 1997. The first thing that happens when you join a political party, particularly the Labour Party, is the secretary rings you up straight away and says, do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? Can you take numbers? Can you sit at a polling station, etc.? And me being me, I got involved right from the off. And the first person I met was Ian Greenwood. Because it was at the time, obviously, when Chris Leslie won his seat, and Ian was a really good friend of Chris Leslie's at the time. So that's basically how I got to know him, and from that day we just became really good friends.
How did you perceive him during those early days? Was he a mentor, or what was his role?
It was an absolute mentor, absolute mentor. I mean, I tell people this story that Ian was instrumental in getting me elected as a councillor. In fact, he knew that I were going to be a councillor before I'd even given it a second thought, you know, so that was Ian. He helped me a lot, particularly during the election time when I first stood, and he were a massive mentor. Ian is always what I call a go-to person. He always had the answer. He always had the answer, and it was always the right answer. If you were struggling with anything, he'd help you. If you needed any advice, Ian would be there to advise you. He was amazing.
Sounds like you're really going to miss his counsel.
I'm going to miss every single thing about him because I spent a lot of time with him socially as well. Bradford will not be the same without Ian. It just won't. Ian had Bradford written right through him. You know, he cared passionately about the city. He really, really cared about the residents. He really cared about them a lot. And he did as much as he possibly could to make Bradford a great place to live. And he succeeded in a lot of areas.
You said you spent a lot of time socially with him. How did he integrate with your family?
Oh my goodness. Well, my mum's in her 90s now, but he's known her a long time. He got on really well with my mum. My mum's really upset about it, really upset. But when he used to come up to my house and he used to show me how to do a bit of public speaking and how to stand, he always made time for my children, particularly my daughter, because she was quite young then, and a friend. And a friend always made sure that she came round when she knew that Ian would come in, and he used to do little magic tricks and all sorts of stuff with them. Do you know what I mean? He always had time for children. He spoke so much about his godchildren, who he absolutely adored. He was so proud of every single one of them. And that's really heartbreaking, actually.
He did have a lot of godchildren, didn't he?
He had loads, yeah. I don't even think I know how many he had, but he did. He had loads, and he were like a second father to every single one of them. He treated them all the same. He respected them all. He supported all of them. He saw them a lot. He spent a lot of time with them all. And as I say, we're really proud. Every time one of them passed their exams, he'd come to work and he'd say, one of them's passed all these exams, they've done really well. He was just so immensely proud of each and every one of them.
Sounds like you're going to miss a friend as well.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I'm really, really going to miss him so much. It's like he's still here somehow, do you know what I mean? It's difficult to explain, but you think about him, don't you? You think, oh, I'll ask Ian. And you think, blimey, you know, Ian's not around anymore. And it's, you know, I'm just dreading the funeral as well. I just don't know how I'm going to cope there, to be honest. But there's going to be hundreds of people, so I'm hoping we can give him a really good send-off.
When you look at Ian's time as a councillor and As leader of the council, what achievements do you think really are his, the most biggest achievements?
Yeah, he's got loads of achievements, as I say. He tried to improve Bradford, he did the best that he could. He really had a lot of time for residents. He wanted to make sure that they got the best of everything, the best that they possibly could. He was immensely proud of Bradford, but he's also left a legacy. There's a lot of people that have got to thank Ian for being where they are, me included. Do you know what I mean? He helped people, he supported people through the political lives. He knew everything about politics. I mean, there were nothing that he didn't know about it, from local politics to national politics. He had some very strong views, but he were always prepared to listen. That were a good thing. If you had a different view to Ian, he always listened. He wouldn't argue with you at all, never argued. I'd never heard him argue. But he would listen to you and then he'd put forward his ideas and his thoughts. He was just really supportive in every way. Over the many years that he's been a councillor, Ian has paid tribute to many, many councillors and dignitaries that had died. And I really, really hope that we can do him justice at this next council meeting on the 11th of December. He always said some lovely, lovely things about the people that had died, and I just really hope that we can do the same for him.
I've known Ian nearly all my life. I've known him since I was a lad. He basically was a larger-than-life character in politics, a very colourful guy. So anybody who was interested in politics, it was difficult not to know Ian. I must have met Ian when I was about 13, 14, when I became active, you know, when I became a member of the Labour Party and I became involved in campaigns and things. You know, I can't remember the exact time, but it was a long time ago.
So Ian's been around throughout your political career. How much of an influence has he been?
I think Ian's had a lot of influence. I mean, I got closer to Ian when I served as his deputy in Bradford Council. That's when I really, I think, got to know Ian very well. And he was somebody who I believe passionately, his number one interest was the district. You know, he was Mr. Bradford, and everything about Bradford and anything that was in the interest of Bradford, Ian was involved in it. And I think he had a massive influence in terms of his care of the district, and, you know, always wanted to fight hatred and division and promote unity across the district. And I think that is something that really impacted on me as well.
And did he give you a lot of support as a councillor and as an MP?
Yeah, I mean, it's bizarre, actually, because, I mean, it's probably more humorous now, and but one of the earliest political acts that Ian did was when I was around 21 and my first application to be on the panel of candidates. Ian was almost indirectly opposed to that because I didn't know him that well at that time, but it's bizarre that we would then go on to become really good friends later on in life. So he has been around in all my political life. I mean, certainly later on in life, some of my most difficult periods, I'd say politically, Ian was one of the very few people that still said to me that you must carry on and you must continue, because this isn't about winning or losing elections, it's about making a positive influence and difference to people's lives. And I think he really did stand shoulder to shoulder with me in some very difficult and turbulent times in Bradford politics.
If you looked at your greatest memory of Ian, what would it be?
I mean, I've got too many greatest memories of Ian, actually, but I think the one that sticks out really for me was when Ian was leader and I was deputy leader, and we had the message of hate delivering EDL come to town not once, twice during that period, and actually seeing him in action against hatred and division in the district. I mean, Ian's great line used to be, these are people that have no interest in our district, that have no stake in our district, that don't belong in our district, and therefore are not welcome in our district. I think that sums up his stance on people that went around advocating hatred. And the way he led and showed real leadership during those difficult periods, I think, are some of my most treasured memories of a man that really did do, sometimes not noticeably, but did a lot for the district, and didn't do it for recognition, but did it out of the love for the district.
And obviously you worked with him as deputy when he was leader. What was he like to work with as the leader?
He's quite a fun guy to work with, actually, because people always saw Ian had a very professional and serious side, but he also had quite a comical side as well, and he could make light in some of the most difficult situations. He had a way with words. You know, he used to always say, give me a room full of people and let me convince them. And then, you know, he often did that quite, I think, you know, remarkably. He was a great guy to work with. He was fun to work with. He was actually a great mentor that would not just do things, but would also be mindful of those that perhaps weren't as experienced to make sure that they understood what's going on. So a real great, fun guy to work with, but also a real professional to work with as well. I mean, I think the whole district has lost somebody who was Mr. Bradford, as I would say, and a real giant of Bradford politics and nationally respected by all. And I think it's very rare you come across people who have as much public service as Ian Greenwood did. You know, even up until his last days, he continued. Even he could have taken an easier life, he could have retired and gone off and done much more leisurely things, but he continued to invest into the district because that was his passion. And I think, you know, Ian did more to unite communities, to fight off hatred and division in the district than anybody else that I can certainly recall or remember. And I think it's a great loss for all Bradfordians, actually. I think it's a great loss on a number of national platforms. It's a great loss to the Labour Party. It's a great loss to the trade union movement. But above all, it's a great loss to all Bradfordians to lose Mr. Bradford. But, you know, I'm sure he's in a better place.
That was Councillor Van der Greenwood and Imran Hussain, MP. Outside of the public life, Ian had many lifelong friends. And we hear from two of those now, Rob Martin and Patrick Howley.
We went to St Stephen's School together from being four. Then we went to Carlton Grammar School. So, yes, known him since then. And, yeah, we're good friends. Yeah, we had different circles of friends at times. But, yeah, it's quite a shock. He always said that he was fit despite his lifestyle.
Well, he certainly always looked younger than his age and looked fairly indestructible in many ways.
Well, he was younger. His birthday is August, so he were one of the younger ones in the form. He stayed at Carlton. He did 3 years in the sixth form. I went off to work and things, but he stayed there. I don't think he got many A-levels, though, but certainly he didn't need them. I think he had the best memory of anybody that I've ever known, and neither of us read as children very early, five, six. But once he learnt how to read, then he did read vociferously loads, a lot, a great deal. And learnt a lot and remembered it and put it all to good use.
What was he like in his school days? Was he well-behaved or was he a bit of a lad?
Not really a bit of a lad, but not necessarily well-behaved either. Probably, I think like most people, you do what you can and get away with what you can. So I don't think there were any discipline issues with him at all, no.
Once he learned to read and everything else, do you think he really sort of settled down into school and enjoyed school and all that sort of thing?
Well, he must have enjoyed it in a way because it took him a long time to leave, but at that time, people weren't too academic and they were looking for work. So I think he quite enjoyed work, certainly once he got to be working for Nalgo. I think his first job was with Shipley Urban District Council. And I'm not sure which straight after that, but he certainly soon got into being a union rep, shop steward. And then his career really did take off in that way. And certainly we talked about politics all the time. We used to go around on a Thursday night to as many Tetley pubs as we could in Bradford. We'd be talking about what we'd do and how we'd do things. And he always used to come out with, well, when I'm commissar. So he did actually get to just be about commissar in Bradford. And he did very well at it.
Of course, you both went to the same schools and then you both followed political life for quite a while.
Yes, we were very much within the Labour Party and I joined in 78 and he were already in and, you know, so gave us a lot of advice and then I stood for and became a councillor in Oxley in 1982. But he was with the West Yorkshire County Council and then when that finished and he were no longer working for the council, he could be a politician himself. We were very good at the politics, in a way the management of the thing, doing casework for people who were very, very helpful. He really quite successful caseworker. Also good at what people might think is more difficult as the politics of the Labour group and keeping the Labour group together.
It wasn't just a political figure to you or something else. You had that close friendship. He was best man at your wedding, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. And one of the things that we did in those years, in a way, were walking. And he had another friend who sadly died, Paul Binns. And they did a lot of walking. And another friend who's already died is Don Smith. And they walked a great deal, did the Munros and things, and they walked in Spain. He was a big walker and really enjoyed doing that, yeah.
And you must have got a lifetime's worth of memories there. Is there anything that you really have this memory that just kind of goes, oh, yeah, that was so Ian Greenwood?
Yeah, funnily enough, it's when we were quite young, probably 10-ish, around there, this place which were called the Old Northern down New Cross Street, and is where the Bradford Northern used to play. There's Ryan Street School on it now, and there were a bit of an hill and a stream, and I remember throwing stones at a milk bottle, and a lot more environmentally friendly even then, and said that we shouldn't do that, and he was very much as, well, of course you can, you know, sort of thing. And another one that's on a bowling rec was when I said that eating this tree, and I told him that trees had feelings too, which he very much derided at the time. I hope now he thinks that they have, yeah.
In 1969, I was part of the organisation that was working to bring the whole community in West Yorkshire through the 1974 reorganisation of local government. And I had a job of going round the constituent authorities, building what they called miscellaneous rents in those days. That meant that I had to go around all the constituent authorities that were going to be part of this new organisation. So this was 1969, before then, that I met Ian, because I went to Shipley Urban District Council to the Treasurer's Department there as part of this work that I had to do for Bradford Met. And I met Ian there and got on really well with him, and we're pals ever since, if you know what I mean. And that's where I first met Ian.
So you worked with him, but obviously his friendship blossomed. I guess that took over more then as time went on.
Oh, it absolutely did, because the thing about Ian was that he was so easy to get on with. It made people warm to him because he was a big lad. And my eldest daughter called him the gentle giant for some of the antics he used to get up with him, because he used to play with them. Ian loved children, and that was the start of it, I think, more than the fact that I'd met with him. He'd met the children from my first two boys, and he saw them grow up and go away, and now the two daughters. And my second marriage is exactly the same. So the four of them, they're full of memories about him. My favourite memory of Ian is when Caroline and Louise, the two girls, when he used to come to the house on a Sunday night for a meal, he'd go down on his hands and knees, and they both could get on his back, and he'd be piggybacking round the room, you know. He'd fall over him, and they absolutely loved it. And that is a side of him I don't know that many people see in Ian, because of his stature and the work that he's done, all different levels, in all different places. There's a lot they don't see about him as a private person, but a good guy.
It's a sharp contrast, isn't it, to the public figure that could put his foot down, create these monumental deals, to being the little thing for kids to ride round on his back.
The thing about Ian is that he was his own man, and he knew when to take something on and when to compromise. And that seemed to be the way that he worked. In our early days together, we were both in NALGO, which was a local trade union at that time. A lot of people said it meant not a lot goes on, you know. And he used to laugh about that. And that's when he decided, I think, what he wanted from his lifestyle. And I had a totally different view about what I wanted to do for my future. Initially, we both went on the trade union side of it, because when the constituent authorities were all bound together, well, that's what made Bradford Met. There was a lot to do, especially merging it all and all the rest of it. And Ian was at his best then, at that time, helping to put it all together, doing a lot of work with NALGO, as it was then. It's Unison now. And, of course, it worked quite well. And that's where we both started together. And he worked his way through his chosen path, and I did exactly the same with mine. And we were on opposite sides then. I was in management, and he was in the trade union movement. But it was lucky for me in many ways, because as I got up the ladder in the local authority, I never really made a big issue about anything that I hadn't first discussed with the trade unions. And that was lucky for me, because Ian wouldn't give any concessions if he didn't think he should. But we never had a problem in all those years, 20 years. We never had a single fight, if you know what I mean. Not like it seems to be sometimes today. It was very different then.
That, of course, was his career side, but you were, of course, very touched by the personal side.
Oh, yeah.
And coming around your house for Sunday dinner, very much involved with your family. What are your overriding memories there?
We used to go on holiday to Spain, a gang of us, with the children. And when Ian was available, he would come with us. And we used to have a great time. And what some of the things that he did, you'd have to see him with the way that he could deal with children. And what he used to do, like, if they were stood on the side of the swimming pool, he'd nudge them in. And then he'd jump in after them. He'd push them up and down, and they loved it. They just loved it. And I thought, this is great for me. I could just sit there and read the paper. But he would just take it away. And he were like that with them. Not only with my family, I know a couple of the families, but that was really the thing about Ian. He was a different person at different times, and he could carry it off. Now, I was out with some friends last night, and we were talking about this, and they were amazed that he was the chair of that big organisation in London, that our pension fund, because he worked with billions of pounds. He used to go to America and speak at the banks, AGMs and things like that. And then he'd come back to the Fox in Shipley, and you wouldn't know, and people didn't know. He just kept it in so that it made him more realistic. For instance, when he got his OBE, he loved every minute of it. And then you can come down from that level to having a few pints with some poor person in a pub, and he could manage it all. That's how I remember him. The kids remember him in a different way. But my two daughters now, they've grown up. For them, they both travel the world. And as they were growing up and doing that, he was in contact with them. All this new technology stuff leaves me behind a bit. But Ian kept in touch with them wherever they were. They'd come back to him if they wanted advice. That was a relationship. They totally and absolutely trusted him. I think my fond memories of Ian are not about all the big things that he's done, because he was always going to do those. It was all the little things that he did that made the difference. And some people used to think, well, he goes on too much, he lectures us and all this sort of carry on, as happens. Well, he didn't see it like that. He was always going to put his tenpenneth in, but he really used to hold back. If he thought he knew more than somebody else, he wouldn't play on it. He'd draw back and let them have their say, and he'd be fair about it. And if he were wrong, he'd admit it. But it was very rare that he was wrong. When we were on holiday in Spain one year, and my sister-in-law locked herself into a public toilet. And she couldn't get out. And we didn't know this. Ian and I were sat at a bar about 50, 60 yards or metres away, as they say these days. And we didn't know that she'd locked herself in. And I don't know how we found out. I think she started banging on the door and all the sort of things that you do. It was a ladies' toilet, you see. That was the amusing thing about it. And my wife's going to kill me for this, if she's But somehow he got to the door of this toilet, and he somehow, I don't know how he did it, levered it out, and the door opened. And of course, sister-in-law, she thought there was some idiot that were trying to break it in, you know. And of course, eventually, you know, he brought her out. That's something that you wouldn't think, but he had the weight to open this door. It's a wonder we didn't get locked up. And we laughed about that for a long, long time. The end.
I know you and Ian shared a particular piece of music that you really enjoyed.
Which is Aitken's Drum. The Valley of Tees. That was it. That was really it. That first came about because I spent some time working away in Nottingham. And when I came back, went to live in Clayton. And Ian was living in Clayton. So we used to go to the village hall, to this do there, and it was Aitken's Drum. And as soon as he sang that song, we knew that was it. And that's what bought the big vinyl, which had all their songs on it. And that was an original. and they're still going. And that is now, well, I can't remember how many years it is, a long, long time.
That was Rob Martin and Patrick Howley. Sadly, that is all we have time for. But we leave you now with the words of Ian himself, recorded when he was standing for the Bolton and Undercliffe seat in May 2018. This is BCB 106.6 FM, and I am Anne Morgan. Thank you for listening to Ian Greenwood Remembered. Can you start by naming your five priorities for the ward?
My five priorities are the education of our young people, which needs improvement and is the rock on which all improvement in the district is based, to deal with the antisocial behaviour and criminality, which it really is, which is more commonplace than it should be, to deal with some of the road problems, which a lot of major roads pass through Bolton and Undercliffe, and the speeding, etc., is very difficult. Because of the topography of the ward, which is one of the hilliest in the district, there are problems with gritting, and the general environment, in my view, needs improvement. There's a lot too much fly tipping and ruined grass verges and that sort of thing.
Why do you think you are the best person to represent the ward?
I think I've got the experience, the commitment and the knowledge. I've been involved in local government for a very long time. I understand it at every level. I am committed. I only ever make three promises when I stand for election, that I'll be available to you, I'll always be honest with you, and I'll never lie to you. Those are the promises I always make. I make those to the people of Bolton and Undercliffe.
Given the cuts to children's services, what will you do to support the families affected?
That's very difficult because it's not council cuts that we're seeing, it's government cuts. We've got to work smarter, we've got to prioritise those in most need. But the truth is there's a chronic underfunding which I don't see this government providing the answer to and the funding to counter anytime soon. So my view would be that a vote on the 3rd of May is not just a vote for me and for the Labour Party in Bolton and Undercliffe, it's a vote against a government which is chronically attacking places like Bradford and underfunding them, which is making the council have to cut. The truth is that the council by 2020 will have lost half its funding.
There is growing housing need. How will you encourage house building in the ward whilst taking into consideration greenbelt issues? And what sort of housing do you think is needed the most?
My own view is that family housing needed the most. I certainly want to encourage house building, but not at any cost. And there's no doubt that you need the infrastructure, the roads and the schools in particular, to be available if you're involved in major house building. Bradford Council and the housing associations within Bradford built more houses than anywhere else in the region, actually. But the planning system doesn't allow for a proper dealing with the infrastructure issue. And, you know, I wouldn't be against planning applications for the sake of it, but I would be against any where the infrastructure isn't available. We clearly need to encourage to build on brownfield sites. The trouble with that is that brownfield sites are actually usually more expensive than greenfield ones, and therefore not as economically attractive to house builders.
The local economy is key. How will you invest in local businesses?
The council's doing a pretty good job at that within its resources as it stands. You know, it's created a lot of jobs in Bradford. We need to work with local businesses, and we need to work with local businesses that are actually based here. One of the issues with, for instance, the shops in Bradford is a lot of them are owned by companies that have no stake in Bradford and therefore no particular will to make Bradford's economy improve, and we need to deal with that. Bradford still has, for instance, as manufacturing, the last time I looked it was 24% of the GDP of Bradford was in manufacturing, which is far in excess of the majority of districts across the region. And we need to work with those manufacturers, a lot of them small and medium sized, that most people won't have heard of, but many of which have international reputations within their own particular industry.
Pink salmon once swam in the clear crystal teas, but now no pink and dorsal fin show. Though the powers of man brought the rain to its knees, on Tees banks the flowers still grow. On Tees banks the flowers
and the beauty of our day. The beauty